Disruption Zone. Opportunity lives where the status quo dies. Talking to the greatest innovators, disruptors, and off-the-wall inventors we can scrounge up. You laugh, you'll learn, you'll be inspired. Now, here are your hosts, Leland Conway and Cameron Mills.
It's the Disruption Zone. Guess what? My buddy, my co-host, my co-executive producer, Cameron Mills, is back on the show. We have a very special episode today. And the question that we are discussing in this current situation is, are special needs students being left behind in governors, mayors, school systems' overreaction to the COVID virus? So in other words, when we're making sure that, like, you know, we're saying that all kids have to stay home, or kids have to stay at home, or we're quick to react, close down schools, et cetera, are we actually overreacting? And in the process, are we actually allowing certain special needs students to fall through the cracks because it's impossible to give them the kind of attention that they might need in a virtual setting? And we know now that children are not a big risk factor for the virus. And so the question becomes, are we doing this the right way? So Cameron Mills is going to come on with us, and his new and lovely bride, Susan Mills. Her son is a special needs student, and she has an organization, which we'll tell you all about, that helps other parents with special needs students. And they're trying to raise the alarm bell at how local authorities, especially in Lexington, but also across Kentucky and really across the nation, are handling the COVID when it comes to schools and how that might be negatively affecting your special needs children. It's a really fascinating conversation. I encourage you to listen to this. I do want to thank our sponsors for the program. We really appreciate Tim Montgomery and the folks over at Louisville Cabinets and Countertops. You can check out their website at LouisvilleCabinetsandCountertops.com. But also, just their location is at 6200 Hit Lane in Louisville, and it's right on the Oldham County line. And these guys did my kitchen before we sold our house to move. And I'm pretty confident that what they did in our kitchen actually led to us being able to sell the house within a day. It sold within a day. I think the kitchen was a big selling point aesthetically, and it really helped move that house very quickly at top dollar. So if you're thinking about remodeling your kitchen, these guys are the guys to talk to. Now, what's cool about Louisville Cabinets and Countertops is you may be a do-it-yourselfer, say, I got this. They've got cabinets in stock that are affordable. And why not support a local business while doing it, right? Like, you can just walk in right there, get the cabinets you need, and put them up yourself if that's what you want to do. But if you want a turnkey kitchen remodel experience, then you can go with that because they've got three designers on staff. So, you know, George, Kelly, and Michelle, you can just pop in there and see them at any time, and they'll walk you through all the way through the steps. So, affordable, in-stock, local cabinets. Any type of countertops that you can imagine, stone, quartz, granite, laminate, some of the laminate can be cut the same day. They can handle whatever it is that you need for cabinets and countertops. That's why they call it Louisville Cabinets and Countertops, right? All right, let's dive into our conversation with Cameron and Susan Mills. The Disruption Zone, and our co-host and co-executive producer is finally back in his chair, Cameron Mills.
Because he finally got another invitation to be on the show.
That is not true. You always distort the truth. You're just like the mainstream media. You come in here and you say these things and they're untrue. Welcome back, dude. I love you.
I love you too.
So you're also bringing along your beautiful...
I've got one in tow.
Gorgeous wife. And I got to tell you, I am super glad, because this is the first time you've been on since you got married. I'm super glad you took my advice and married someone way prettier than you.
Welcome, Susan. I don't think that
Mills.
Was ever in doubt.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here. I've heard so much about it and, of course, listened to the show. So
sweet. Well, welcome. Awesome. We're glad to have you here.
She listens to the shows that I'm on.
And I'm super.
To be clear.
Yeah, I see how it is. Yeah. I'm super glad that that you guys are now married. And I got to tell you, Cameron, he's wonderful and I love him to death. But he needed you, Susan. He really needed you. And you've made him like 1,000 times more awesome. Because that's what it's supposed to do. That's what God does when he brings us together with our soulmate.
It's weird how many times I've heard exactly that from people that I presumed knew me and were close to me. And yet somehow I'm not taking offense to it. Because the more Susan and I are together, the more like, what are we? We're right at 2 months now.
Yeah.
And I don't want to turn this into gooey romantic silliness. But
no,
I mean,
not at all.
I'm gonna start playing a little violin.
I mean, it is. She actually without there's no. I just watch the way she behaves, and I think, okay, I've got to match her.
Oh yeah,
I've got to match. I can't fall behind this one.
Go ahead, Susan. I'm sorry.
The fact is that we both balance each other out in ways. We lift each other up, and what God has done truly is just mind-blowing.
And that's how godly marriages are supposed to work. I've had friends that have come to me and they talk about like how, you know, they complain about their marriage and they're like, how is it you guys? And I'm like, because it's soulmate. It's the person you're supposed to be with, and it's the person that makes you better. And I always tell people, I speak to groups all the time, and I always tell them, I'm like, look, my wife is the financial genius in our household. I'd be broke and living under a bridge if it wasn't for her.
That's true of here too.
Yeah. And in terms of like just life decisions, she is my moral compass. I literally don't make major decisions, especially involving ethical dilemmas, until I have run it past her. And if she says this, then I have a peace about it in my soul. If I go against that, inevitably I'm going to screw something up.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well, just to be on the same page, though, especially with someone that you've said in marriage, okay, we're a team now. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what I've looked, because I went through this before 20 years ago, and it was very different from what it is. There's a reason I waited 20 years to do it again, and actually the reason was is because I wasn't going to do this again. And then less than a year ago, Susan and I started talking and then dating. And then we met and then ran from each other for a couple weeks before
right.
that. But, I mean, I didn't want this, or at least I didn't think I wanted this. And then now I can't imagine with life without her and without this relationship. So,
well, congratulations to both of you. And I'm super glad
you guys
are here. But we wanted to talk about something that I think a lot of parents – especially in Central Kentucky and certainly in Lexington, are struggling with. But I think across the nation, too, is one of the fallout aspects, Cameron, of COVID is what happens when school starts again. And now that we're back in that season, I've got coworkers that are dealing with confusion. They're dealing with a mess. And you guys are right smack in the middle of this in Fayette County, Kentucky.
Well, and the two of us, Susan and I, are right smack in the middle of this personally. And this is what's so – it's like my life has just been – a year ago, what did I care if Fayette County went back to school or not? What did I care I'm sure it would be good for the kids. I'm sure it would be, you know, it'd be nice for the economy if everything got back on track, but it's not directly personally affecting me. And then as of August 8th, it's directly personally affecting me. And, and what I'm saying is all of a sudden I'm getting this different perspective of what parents are going through. And we've got a special case in the sense that Susan's son, Alex, and maybe just cut me off and go whenever you want to. So Susan's son, Alex, is on autism spectrum disorder. Is that he's very high functioning with autism. He's smart as he can be. But he struggles with communication. He struggles with emotions. He struggles with, as is my understanding from Susan, as do a lot of kids with autism. So basically, he is officially, as of with his curriculum in Fayette County, he is special education. And the frustration that in this house has, yes. So what they're doing in Fayette County, Leland, is they've got, well, I guess Kentucky, all over Kentucky and probably all over the country for schools that are not back in session, is at least here, everybody got Chromebooks. Some parents actually got bills for the Chromebooks. Not sure how that happened or why.
Right.
But we got this Chromebook, and we were going to go virtual, which sounds like it would work when you're talking maybe middle school, high school age, because they know how to work a computer. But when you're doing kindergarten, first grade, second grade, third grade, now, you know, I know kids know how to play video games, know how to do iPad, but We're actually talking a PC now. We got to learn how to alt control delete. We got to reset. We've got, you know, and then they send Chromebooks with that honestly don't have enough memory or power to really do the zooming that they're wanting to do. So there's constant resets. And And so there's all these kind of little things, right? Little penny ante. Okay, we'll work through it. We'll figure it out. It'll get better if this is our lot this year. And as of now, in Fayette County, there is no plan to go back to school yet. They're thinking about it, working about it, they're evaluating numbers, blah blah blah. But the frustrating thing that for me, in watching Susan get frustrated, is her son has special needs. We drive by him all the time. There are football games every Friday. There are soccer games. There are volleyball matches. I get that they're outside. The volleyball matches aren't. But it's frustrating when we see that a bunch of effort has been expended on behalf of the athletes. A lot of it by the Kentucky High School Athletic Association, and that's their job.
Right.
But somehow it seems like there's a group of kids in Kentucky, specifically in Fayette County, because remember, some schools are back in session. Some schools are going full bore. Some are doing the hybrid thing, 2 days in school, 2 days at home.
Right.
Fayette County is still at home. And there doesn't seem to be all of the kids that have the special needs. And think about the range that could be, Leland, because that's what I'm learning, is that Alex is incredibly smart. I mean, I'm sitting next to him and he's doing his math on Zoom, he's actually beating me to the, plus and minus answers.
Right.
He gets there before I do. He's very, very smart. He can speak, he can count to 10 in Chinese and Japanese. And I mean, he's bright. But there's this other side that he was doing, according to Susan, I'll let her speak to this, but so well last year at another Fayette County school. And that's just, I live on the other side of the city. He was doing so well. He was in a regular classroom, and I think for what, an hour a day maybe?
Right. Yeah, an hour a day. He'd get pulled out for social group.
Well, now in the virtual environment, that's all gone. There is a 30-minute social group for him, but when you've got communication issues with a child and emotional issues with a child, and that can be a variety of things when you talk about, quote-unquote, what is special needs, that's just not going to happen when it comes to doing it virtually. And so they figured out how to make it work for the athletes, right?
Right.
Nobody seems to even be talking or considering, well, what about this other group that's out there? The ones that, we talk about all through COVID, not necessarily the most vulnerable when it comes to COVID, but still vulnerable.
Right.
Right. You know, a regular child, and I'm sorry for saying regular, I hate that, but a child that does not have autism, a child that does not have, struggle with communication, they could probably do okay when it comes to this, even in first grade when it comes to this virtual stuff, especially if they have a parent sitting there beside them all day, and that's what we've had to do. But it just got to the point, and I'll shut up after this, I'll make this last statement because this was Susan's decision as of today. We've been doing this for a month, and I have watched Alex been reduced to tears. I've watched Susan be reduced to tears in frustration, not because of the situation, but more so, I think, because nobody seems to be trying to fix this particular situation, which is, wait a minute, the athletes are playing. There's another group here of special needs kids who seem to be completely forgotten about because they can't have school like this. School like this does not work for them, and the frustrating thing is there are some schools around here, Leland, not Fayette County, but who have actually done that. They have understood, okay, we've got special needs kids that, well, let's bring them in first. If we're going to do a hybrid thing, let's bring them in for the first few weeks. Let's start with them. Fayette County's not doing that. They're kind of leaving it up to every individual school to decide how they're going to start back to school. And it got to the point today where Susan basically pulled Alex out of Fayette County Public Schools and said, we're homeschooling. Which, to be honest, that's what we were doing anyway.
Right.
We were homeschooling, and he had a great teacher, but it's just not working for us. It wasn't working for Susan. It wasn't working for Alex, and I don't think it was working for Alex's father. It's just one of those things where this doesn't work, so we're going to do it ourselves.
Susan, it sounds like there's no leadership.
The leadership hasn't been transparent, and I think that's been the most frustrating thing because through all of this, the one thing that we've been asking for more than anything at all is just communication. What's going on? What is the plan? We want an exact plan. So even there was a board meeting. There was a lot of people, a lot of parents that went down and stood in front of the board.
Let me interrupt you just a second. Cameron, can you just pump her mic up just a little bit?
Yeah. Right. She's very soft-spoken.
Yeah. Go ahead. All right. Continue. Sorry.
Sorry. Is this better?
Yes, it's much better.
Okay. Perfect. So I think the most frustrating thing for the parents in Fayette County has definitely been just the lack of transparency. So we've been really, really wanting to get just the facts. What is the plan to go back? What's the planning process for all of this? And so there was a board meeting. The last board meeting was September 28th. And so a lot of parents of children actually went down, and we called it a gathering. It wasn't a riot. It wasn't a protest. We just wanted to make sure that people knew that we were there and that we were advocating for our kiddos. And so the decision was made on that day that a decision was made to not make a decision until November 2nd at the earliest. And so at that time it was, I think a couple days later, it was determined that on October 19th is when the schools could start providing targeted assistance to those who needed assistance from the education. So now this is where it gets even more frustrating, is that it was left up to each individual school. So you could have one elementary school on one side of Lexington providing targeted services for all of the kids who have IEPs and 504s.
Okay, explain what IEPs and 504s are.
So they're basically, by law, when you have an IEP or an individualized education program, is that you sit in a room of occupational therapists and speech therapists and physical therapists and the teachers and special resource teachers, and everyone comes up with a plan on how they can provide your child basically the best education possible. So
for his needs.
For his needs. So any accommodations that they may need. So, for example, Alex was in a general mainstream classroom, but he has sound sensitivities. So he had a little pair of headphones that he hung on his desk. So whenever they had like a big general assembly in the gym, he was allowed to bring his headphones if he wanted to. When he went to the bathroom, the hand dryers that just about take the skin off your hands, I mean, they're no joke. He was allowed to bring his headphones. And so, just little accommodations like that, if he needed extra time for the test. So all of this is written out in that piece of paper. One thing that the parents are finding is that all of these IEPs or the 504s, which is a step down from the IEPs, they haven't been updated since last year. And so a lot of these kids have experienced not only regression, but nowhere in these individualized education programs are any kind of verbiage for virtual. And so no accommodations are being given to these kids in the virtual setting. So from, student A has the same kind of virtual program as student B, even though student B may need accommodations.
Right.
So any of the homework.
And by law, I'm sorry, I turned my mic down, Leland. And by law, they're supposed to provide that.
Right.
Yes.
Right. And it sounds like they didn't think this through.
No, they didn't. And so after the September 28th board meeting, it still came out. So the teachers and the parents, like we were given a survey, I think the parents in summer, saying if we were to return to school, which one would you prefer? Would you prefer a virtual learning academy? Would you provide a hybrid situation? Or are you full board, let's go all in Monday through Friday? And you had to rank them. So everyone's thinking, okay, well, we're going to be provided an option. And so the option, there was no option. It was, we're not doing that. So, and one of the frustrating things is our superintendent is basing whether or not we go back to school on whether or not we are in the red or orange zone for the state. And so there are skewed numbers from the COVID-19 cases where Lexington Fayette Health Department has different numbers than what the state is reporting due to a lag in the computer reporting.
Right.
So even as of today, you have 2,000 plus cases that are being reported from the state at the state level, but only 900 and some are actually new cases.
New cases as of today.
Right. Wow.
But either way, and Leland, I think of that, and my frustration with that part, and this may go to the wider COVID thing in general, is So they're getting very microscopic into planning things for, okay, so Jessamine County, which is right down the road, they went back full bore to school last week. Just full bore, right? Some schools are doing this, you know, as we talked about before, the hybrid of, okay, a couple days at school, a couple days at home. We'll scatter them around so, you know, we don't have a whole bunch of kids in the classroom at one time. But they're basing that off of the numbers in that particular county as though there are borders that people can't cross.
And that's
the thing. Like, okay, so if Fayette County has this number, this many, let's say 900 or whatever. 900 was that for the state, though, right?
Yeah.
900 for the state. So whatever it was in Fayette County, they're basing whether or not they go or even start to plan on going back to school based on numbers, as Susan said, it came out today, are dated. But even if they weren't dated, if they were accurate as of today, I can still drive to Jessamine County. I could still go down there and infect someone. They could still come up here. I guess part of it is I wish, and I guess I understand why maybe not. It's like, hey, we want to make the best decision for the people in this particular area.
Right.
But that's kind of what Fayette County is doing too, with saying, okay, so for example, the school that Alex goes to, it decided they are going to start, and this was good news, we thought.
Yes.
Because they were going to start opening their doors back up, but specifically for their special needs students.
Right. On October 19th.
On October 19th. And so we got, okay. So not only is there a plan, but there's a plan for the kids, again, and I'm going to go back and use the phrase that when it comes to education, the most vulnerable, the ones that Susan has seen a regression in from Alex from March to now, and I'm sure a lot of parents have seen that in their kids. But so there's a plan and then there's a hope, and they're identifying these special needs kids, and we're going to do something for them first because they're the most quote unquote, let's say, high risk. Well, that's not exactly what they're doing. So it turns out that Alex doesn't qualify under their, that this particular school's principal's definition of who he's going to allow, because I think they're only allowed 15% of their population in their school. So he's decided they're going to
start with kindergarten.
Kindergarten special needs,
right?
In kindergarten or kindergarten special needs?
Kindergarten special needs.
Either way, the bottom line is that it's just there's been very little communication. The virtual thing just isn't it for us. It doesn't work at all, and it just doesn't seem like my frustration as coming in and brand new to all this is I know the athletes have advocates. I know, you know, KHSAA and other people are out there and they marched on Frankfurt and said, "Let us play, let us play, let us play." It bothers me. I'm like, where are the advocates? And of course, Susan is one with her nonprofit, My Autism Tribe. And there were many down at that gathering, let's say, at the Fayette County Board of Education. But where are the people saying special needs, special needs, special needs, whatever you want to call them, that, you know what, these are the kids that need more. And what we're providing them now doesn't work. And nobody seems to be talking about that at all, except a small group of people on Facebook.
Well, let me step in here and just – I want to pontificate for a second because I'm trying to take all this in.
Yeah, it's a lot. I know.
No, it's great because I want to say something that's been bugging me. And so obviously I don't like COVID.
Oh, really?
Obviously it's a problem and I don't want to minimize it as a virus. But I do want to say that we have to, as a society, like I'm one of the things that has turned me off so much during this whole thing is that COVID is either or.
Yeah.
And it's either you're an anti-masker or you're a masker. So you're either complying entirely with everything that the government says, or you're some sort of Samuel Adams rebel. And there seems to have almost been a complete, like, there's so much hysteria around it. And here we have a thing where it's like, I don't want anybody to get sick, but we can't literally throw our main responsibility out the window. We're dealing with kids who, frankly, are not that affected by this virus. I mean, we're talking about in numbers that are so small that the flu is more dangerous to them.
Yes.
So when we have the flu outbreak every single year, we don't shut down the entire school in most cases. And we continue on with our plan. But we have, for whatever reason, and I think it's politics, decided that this virus, which is not as bad as they're making it out to be, warrants literally throwing special needs kids' needs out the window. I mean, you guys can agree or disagree with what I just said, but it frustrates me to hear your frustration because these are very real problems, and I'm not saying the virus is not real,
right.
but these are very real problems, and we've literally gotten so caught up in our hysteria to comply and our hysteria to make sure that this virus sticks around until November 3rd. Mm-hmm. And watch me. Watch it. It's going to go away right after November 3rd. No matter what happens, I swear to God, by January, we're all going to be back to normal, and they'll be like, oh, yeah, we got to get herd immunity. That's what drives me nuts about this, because these are very real problems, and I don't think letting your child go back into school and get the stuff that he needs in terms of his education is going to cause 1,000 grandmas in Fayette County to die. I just don't think that's going to happen. Okay.
Well, the point is that even if they open schools up, no one was asking them or suggesting, and nor is anyone expecting that they were just going to open up and everything was going to be business as usual.
Right.
The restaurants were opened up a very specific way. It's like everything was thought about in the last, you know, 3 or 4 months. You know, as school got derailed back in March and April and May, everything was thought about. Think, okay, now when are we going to reopen the economy? When are we going to do this? When are we going to do that? And it's like, and again, I don't mean to harp on Fayette County and the Board of Education or their superintendent, but it's like, did we not have meetings and plans? And what is it? Just that is Fayette County too big? Is it? I mean, it's just like I don't understand why counties surrounding us are in school.
Right.
Fayette County is not. That's the thing that I can't get over. And we can take the special education part and put it to the side. We can take all this put aside. Why, if I drive 5 miles down the road, if I lived 5 miles down the road, this young man would be going to school every day right now.
Right.
But because I've lived 5 miles up the road in the same Kentucky public education system, he's at home learning on a Chromebook that has about as much memory as I think my first iPod did.
Yeah, and it's true. So just from the lack of planning, you know, they started talking about this supposedly over the summer. I mean, we've been having NTI since March. So there should have been a lot of planning that should have happened by then. And starting, I think, tomorrow is when they have to have them in. But the staff just now received, the staff of the Fayette County Public School System just received a survey asking them if they did return to school, whether it was a hybrid situation or full on board, would they come back or not? They just received that survey and they have to turn them in by tomorrow. Why are they just now receiving that survey?
Right.
That to me doesn't make any sense. So, like Cameron's point, you have all of these other school systems that are starting to go back. Some of them are Monday through Friday. There's a county here, several counties that, you know, are going back from 8 a.m. until 2 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right.
My biggest concern in all of this is that, you know, you have these little minds that are being required to sit in front of the computer for really, really long periods of time, asking to sit still, get reprimanded when they're not, when they have the wiggles. Their little bodies just aren't able to do that. Their attention spans aren't that long, and they get frustrated. And so just the mental standpoint from all of this, like, how is this affecting, you know, what are the longitudinal effects of this?
Right.
You know, what kind of backpedaling are we going to have to do? Emotional counseling. I am a firm believer that my son's emotional health is just as important as his education or anything else. And so that was probably the final, you know, determining factor in being able to pull him out, because I'm not going to have my child hate school.
Right.
And in this environment, he does.
Yeah. So another issue that is a problem with all of this, too, is that apparently the reporting of COVID cases, and you mentioned this briefly a while ago, you talked about various areas where there might be a high number of cases versus as if there's borders that we don't cross.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
There's also apparently different reporting standards for Fayette County versus the state.
Mm-hmm.
What's going on there? Because that also seems to be messing things up for you guys.
I don't know. It seems like one side's blaming the other. I think the governor was blaming the Fayette County Health Department. The Fayette County Health Department was apparently saying, we got you. We sent this stuff to you all back in August. Why are you just now reporting it? I don't know. And of course, that's the part of the problem. I mean, Leland, we can take the statistics and make them say anything we want, right? I mean, so nobody... Nobody in this household is thinking things should be normal. I think what we're saying and what we've gotten to the point of is that we're already homeschooling him. Right. You know, Susan and I, particularly more Susan, basically she's got a full-time job. She's balancing that. She's balancing teaching from home on a very strict schedule, by the way. And I think that was one of the deciding factors. If we pull him out and we homeschool him, he's on our schedule now, right? We can get him through the curriculum on our schedule. And if that means 6 o'clock at night, that means 6 o'clock at night.
Right.
But that doesn't mean 8 to 2 when he's got, you know, a first grader logging in on, all right, well, he's got to go to Ms. Markham's class. So he's got to click this link. Okay. Now he's got to go to Ms. Dalton's class or you know, this. So he's got to click this. Now we got to go do this. And you know, even they simplified it as much as they could. But it's just not working for the younger kids. And I sit with Alex sometimes in the mornings, watch all the other kids in his class. I just sit there and think, okay, I get it. If we were in the classroom, the chaos that I'm watching would not be nearly as bad because the teacher could walk up to a kid and put her hand on the desk and the kid immediately snaps to attention. That's not happening now.
No, because you have mom in the background doing dishes. Oh. You have a dog barking. You have a little brother or sister.
Susan has a conference call, or I have a conference call for work. We've got a dog. There's nothing. We did our very best to make him a room that was his classroom, that was his where he went to school every day, and he's just not going to school every day. And so Susan pulled him out, and we're going to homeschool him. And you know what? When Fayette County goes back, he might go back because, Susan, you told me this, like his experience at Veterans Park last year was amazing.
It was amazing.
Amazing. Yeah. I mean, from everything, but he was thriving. And that's the thing that worries me because I'm just getting to know Alex Lewin.
Yeah.
And from things that Susan has told me, you know, the last 2 months I've seen maybe what I would call a regression in, you know, some behaviors. That, you know, under normal circumstances, he had championed, he had kind of, I don't know what the right word is.
Yeah,
really.
He struggles with being able to regulate his body. So a lot of us, if we're feeling stress, you know, we may go out and go for a walk or, you know, whatever. And so, and he's learning his body, and it'll get better over time, but he has a problem with regulating his body. So when he gets overly excited or if he gets bored or, you know, his attention span's not there, he starts stimming. And so for some of us, that may be like clicking a pin, you know, or tapping our foot on the floor. His body, his whole body feels it.
Yeah.
And so he will jump up and down. He'll run in circles. And this pattern is increasing.
It's gotten worse, Leland. And that's the thing where, okay, this is not working.
It's not healthy.
It's not working. It's not healthy. He is regressing emotionally and mentally. And we've seen it, and Susan's got more evidence of it because she's known Alex for 7 years. I've known him for a year and lived with him for two months. But and I think that's kind of when my eyes opened up. I knew it wasn't working. I knew it was frustrating. But, you know, I have to admit, even over the last 2 weeks, it seems in particular, and Susan and I talk about this every night, his stimming, and Leland, and I know Susan explained it, but Alex's stims have gotten to the point where they're like full body jumps. It's like he's running in a decathlon all at once in one moment. And it's almost like a spasm.
Right.
It's controlled, but it's not controlled. And it's just what he has to do.
Right.
And it's gotten worse. His stimming has gotten more, I don't know if this is the right word, but violent, it seems like to me. It's gotten more excessive.
Yeah.
Where when I first met him, he'd climb on the sofa. You know, he'd make some funny noises.
He's a 7-year-old boy. Yeah. I mean, he has energy. And it's just right now, it's very uncontrolled.
Yeah.
And so that's worrisome, you know, because he spent so many years in therapy
learning to control
this and how to adapt to certain situations and stuff, and was doing so well in the school environment. He was surrounded by peers. He was surrounded by, you know, just, you know, teachers that were so, so supportive. And his teacher, in the school this year has been so supportive, but you can only be so supportive, you know, in a computer screen.
So let me ask you this, as a parent dealing with this issue, what advice do you have? Because in a way, the reason we're having this conversation is because I think the three of us assume that there is a lot of other families throughout the country, really, also mm-hmm. Kentucky, but maybe in this case specifically Fayette County, that are dealing with similar issues. Now, you guys have taken things into your own hands, mm-hmm. and you've brought Alex home, and you're doing the home.
He was already home. Well, that's the point,
but
right?
I just mean that you're bringing his education into the home.
Right.
But what, through the first few weeks of this, what advice do you guys have for other parents who might be facing the same issue? That what would you say to them to look for? What would you say to them? And what would you say people ought to come together to try to demand of the leaders in the school system?
That's a good question. So I'll address the last question first. And I think really all that the parents, at least from the conversations that I've had and my own personal opinion, is that we're just asking for options. So if there is a family that wants to do virtual learning at home, let that be an option. You know, for them, maybe they do have a high-risk individual living in the home mm-hmm. that maybe is going through chemotherapy or whatever, and they cannot have that exposure. That's completely fine. But if that is not going to work for you, have the option B for in-person learning. You know, there's, I always say where there's a will, there's a way. There's right. got to, you can't just throw your hands up in the air and say, this is the best that we have to work with
well,
right now.
The frustrating, and again, I keep saying the frustrating thing is, and I keep repeating myself.
I say the same.
I know, Leland, the businesses found a way or are finding a way, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. This is one of those things, and I hate to turn
feels
it back
like
to
it's
politics.
Getting, it's falling through the cracks.
Well, it's definitely falling. Again, this particular population, I believe, definitely is, based on my experience with this one particular young man who is special needs. But my frustration is that there's no competition, so to speak. So you know what? If we have school, we have school. If this is mm-hmm. what we have, this is what we have. If this is what we don't have, this is what we don't have. And so it just feels like because there's been so much poor communication for as far as the plan, as far as what we're going to do. And Susan mm-hmm. said that they're just now asking the teachers, would you come back if we started having school in school
right.
In Fayette County? And there's not that other side. Well, but there actually is that other side. There is a competitor to this. And there's actually more than one. I mean, Susan and I, we called every private school mm-hmm. that we could think of. In the thing about yeah. private schools in particular, though, is they're not legally – forced into having a special needs program. So that really right. wasn't an option for us. So the only real option for us was, again, something we were already doing. Alex is going to be on our schedule. He's going to go through a curriculum that we choose and his father chooses. And we're going to, you know what, we're going to teach him and educate him maybe long term, maybe for the next few months. But mm-hmm. we're going to do it on our timetable because that's what works for this household right now. And that's what works for this young man because it's not functioning the way it is now, and watching Alex emotionally just kind of fold more often recently than he mm-hmm. did when school started, even though it was virtual, Leland, he was excited. It was school. Even though it was a weird school, it was school. He does get excited, you know, when the Zoom calls come in, he sees his friend. But I'm telling you, the turn from excitement to, oh yeah, this is what school is emotionally in him. He didn't say it. I just right. feel like I can feel it because I'm sitting there beside him sometimes and man, I feel it. It's like the energy's just come out of all of it. And it's like, what are we doing? I almost feel like we're just better off saying, okay, you know what? 2020 school year is a wash. It's going to wash. We're all going to come back next year and hope it's going to be better. I'm not sure what else they're getting out of it. I'm not sure they're getting anything better out of it right now than they would if they did that.
Right.
And I'm also a proponent. Ever since Alex received his diagnosis of autism, I knew that from really early on, I was going to have to be the squeaky wheel that got
right,
the grease.
Yeah. Right,
you know,
right.
I have been that mama bear, and I've pulled my claws out on more than one occasion to advocate for my child because I want him to have the very best, and I won't settle for anything less. So when it started to become this daily frustration, we all have frustrations in life. They ebb and they flow. But when it was becoming a daily frustration and it was affecting every member in this household in a very deep way, meaning that, you know, were we getting through the day? Yeah. Were we still smiling? Yeah. But there was just this underlying pressure, tension, and it's that's not healthy. So I think, like, for anyone that's just considering, you know, whether you homeschool or sending your child, you just have to do what's best for your family and block out everything else, because at the end of the day, the family under your roof is the most important thing. And yeah. So, and that is to keep everyone happy and healthy. And so whatever that looks like, that's what you go with.
Yeah. I just keep coming back to, as I listen to you guys speak, this is so asinine to me that, like you said, Cameron, you brought up the point. Restaurants have found a way. Sports has found a way.
Yep. Yeah.
Malls never needed to find a way. People were going to Lowe's the entire time. People were going to Target the entire time.
That's all people did. That's all go to Lowe's and Home Depot.
Oh my gosh, yeah. You'd drive by and it's like there was the only place to go, and then go through the drive through line at whatever restaurants they could get drive through from.
Yeah.
You know, but that then when it comes down, and that's to me, that's what this whole virus has been about. And this, not to make it political, because
that's okay, that's what you I get it.
Well, I think it is political, but I also think both political sides have done this wrong. And I think what it's become is become a silly fight over mask or no mask,
right,
as opposed to, you know what, a long time ago we should have done, about 6 weeks into this, here's what we should have done. We should have said the elderly and people with compromised immune systems need to stay home. Yeah. Everybody else needs to put on a damn mask and go back to life.
And live your life.
Yes, that's what we needed to do, because then we could have figured out how are we going to do school in the fall. Okay? Yeah. I saw one school that had set up little partitions between each desk.
Yeah.
Right.
And I was like, hey,
find a way.
Guess what? That's how I went to school, Accelerated Christian Education. Everybody had their own little desk facing the wall with the little partition in between. Yeah. Go for it. You know, but then we could have figured out a way, but instead we're still bickering over this ridiculousness, and you know, it's causing real honest to goodness pain and real honest to goodness setbacks for kids who otherwise could be doing just fine.
Well, so. And I think that's the biggest lesson I've taken out of this, and it's Susan and Alex have taught me this, is that I think the assumption we all make about education is that, okay, so when I went to first grade, everything I knew at the very end of my first grade year, I knew. And over the summer, maybe I forgot something about this, something about that. But when I came back for second grade, I could still do my plus and minuses and my division and my multiplication. And I could still spell the words for the most part that I could spell. There's this expectation that once you learn it, you learn it. This is different. This is, and Susan, I think, alluded to this earlier. This is a regression. And if not academically for the young man that we're speaking of, then from the emotional standpoint, and if for only to protect that, because to Susan, who has told me, you know, basically in a year, I've gone through the whole story of who Alex is, and that, you know, his diagnosis, that he was nonverbal up until age four.
Gosh, 2 years ago.
Two years ago, this kid did not speak. Now he's speaking in Chinese and Japanese, and he's doing all this, but emotionally and that's where the regression is coming. Let me tell you real quick, Leland, when something happened, and we live in a little cul-de-sac, and something happened the other day that honestly was one of the coolest things, and it was something that used to happen all the time. We have, it turns out, because I didn't know my neighbors very well until Susan moved in, but it turns out we've got some young kids about Alex's age in the neighborhood and on my little cul-de-sac that we live on. And I think it was last Friday night, for whatever reason, everybody, I guess it's just a pretty night, everyone went out on the front porches. Well, here come the kids. Well, here come the dogs. And all of a sudden, you know, the kids just, because they just started running around playing. There were big wheels. There were, you know, challenges. There was, he rode his bike down the steep driveway. Okay, well, let me see if I can ride my bike down. There was normalcy. And even for that moment, it's like, wait a minute, this is what the kids are missing.
Yeah. Oh.
That's what, when we went
Alex's
to the,
face lit up when I told him, I said, there are kids outside.
Yeah.
He was like, when we went to the sky opened up and there were angels.
When we went down to the, again, you don't want to call it a protest. When we went down to the Board of Education, there were teachers that were there. They were there secretly, by the way. They were.
Yes.
Some of them had, they were not supposed to be there, supposedly.
They are not allowed to talk.
They're not allowed to be there. So, but they were there. There was one lady in particular who was there because she just, we've got to go back to school was the only thing she kept saying. But the bottom line is the kids that were there down at the Board of Education for that rally, let's call it that, to go back to school, the parents were making signs. The parents were, you know, being honked at and, you know, holding up and, you know, this, that, and the other. And just being there more than anything and saying, hey, we've got to find a better solution than this. The kids were running around doing what kids do.
Right.
And that's what I think they're missing. That's the part. And I think I don't think enough is being said to that. And I'll go back to what I said at the very beginning, because this is, I think, for me personally, my jumping off point is the athletes have advocates. The athletes have people that will fight for them, because we all want to see our football teams play on Friday nights, Saturday nights, and Sunday afternoons.
Right.
Who's fighting for these kids other than their parents, these special needs kids? Other than their parents, where is their advocacy group? And their advocacy group is there. There is one. But, look, I get it. It's not going to be what sports is, because we all love sports, and this is a little small part of the population. But these are the kids who don't have anyone necessarily speak up for them other than their parents. And I would think that the Board of Education, that those who are responsible, who have said, we will be educators, we will mold these young kids regardless of their ability or their disability, I would think they would have thought, okay, before we consider the athletes, maybe we should consider the special education needs.
Yeah. Yeah, you would think that would come first. I just had a random thought the other day. I was driving down the road. I went past a high school, and I thought, you know, so the difference in my life between my junior year and my senior year, and this doesn't have anything to do with autism. This just has to do with childhood development. But in my junior year, there was a girl that I was crushing on so hard, and she needed a date to the prom. And so she asked me to go, and I was just elated. Until she just used the fact that she had a date to get started with the rest of her conversations, and she ended up leaving with the star of the basketball team, right? So this was like a really difficult night for me.
I'm struggling with what the problem is in the story
so far.
Here's
where it comes about.
Leland, I don't understand. Year, this sounds very normal.
The next year, I didn't say it was abnormal. I said this is about development. The next year, she was my girlfriend at the prom.
You didn't steal her away from the star basketball player. No, you didn't.
I did.
Bananas.
But here's the thing. Here's the thing. I thought randomly as I drove past this high school, you know, how much my life changed between junior year and senior year, and how much development took place, and how much that challenge, you know, to my ego and my you know, just the way I felt about myself and my self-esteem, how much that challenge and then bouncing back from that meant to me in terms of my development into adulthood. What if that was gone? What if my senior year never happened? You know
great
what I'm saying?
Point.
So,
yeah.
So I'm not trying to equate.
No. No,
you know.
No, it's a great point.
There was adversity. You face adversity, and that's the thing. And we all face that.
But my point is that, especially with kids with special needs, take what I went through and what would happen to, you know, kids that don't have special needs, what they might deal with from losing that. Now amplify that for a child with special needs who not only misses the social connection, but also the learning connection.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what terrifies me about a situation like this.
Yeah.
Because we don't have an unlimited number of years developing our children. You know, again, that difference between a junior year and a senior year, the difference between middle school and high school, the difference between coming out of grade school into developing into a teenager, those are fleeting periods of time.
Yeah.
And once they're gone, you know?
Well, and the bottom line is that one way or the other, because of COVID, regardless of what any of us believe politically, COVID was going to It was going to be a hurdle in the midst of this year in 2020. It was just going to be, no matter what we believe or what happened, it was. But at the same time, how we treat it and what we do and what we do with it, as far as, okay, is this the best we can do? And I think, again, that's the bottom. That's the issue, is that is the Fayette County Board of Education, are they doing the best they could do for their kids right now?
Right.
Well, and one of my concerns is that, okay, once all of this is over and done with, are we going to look at this and say, okay, this is what we learned and this is how we can grow from this, you know, facing adversity or whatever? Or are we still going to be in the position where we're pointing fingers? Mm-hmm. You know, well, this was this person's fault that this happened or whatever. Because I truly believe, and Cameron does too, is that, you know, gosh, every single human being goes through life challenges, and you can either use those to become a better person, or you can just kind of throw your hands up in the air and just blame everyone else for it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
indeed.
So Alex is coming home, and we're going to mold him just ourselves for the time being. His dad, myself, and Susan.
Right.
Yeah. I assume Susan will be part of – you'll do the academic stuff, right?
I'll
be
in charge.
Please, Susan, please do the academic stuff. Please don't let Cameron do it.
I'll do PE, and then we're good.
Yeah, awesome.
Gosh, we've gone 45 minutes, guys. I want to make sure people know about your organization, Susan. My Autism Tribe. It's myautismtribe.com or myautismtribe.org.
That's right.
My hope is that people listen to this conversation, and even if they don't have kids with special needs, it causes them to go, you know what? We all need to stand up for those children in our communities. So I hope that even if people are listening and they don't have necessarily the specific challenges that you guys have, or even if they live in a district where they're not having these issues, that there's a recognition and a coming together on that. But how can people be a part of your organization, and what should they know about your organization?
Well, the website, you can get more information, but as a whole, one of the things that I wanted to do when I started the nonprofit, it was the beginning of last year, was that I wanted to make sure that I engaged the whole community, because a lot of people say, well, I don't have a child that is on the spectrum, or, you know, but I guarantee you that you are at least one degree away from someone that does have a personal experience with autism. It has become more prevalent.
Or maybe a wedding ceremony away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And so I want to engage the whole community, because my goal for Alex is to live in a community that's completely accepting and inclusive for him.
Right.
And so when he goes to find a job, when he is out there finding love, I want the community to know about him and others. And so a lot of the events that have not existed this year, but last year, and hopefully will resume next year, engage the whole community. So engage restaurants, engage, you know, we had photography sessions with an amazing photographer here that works with special needs, being able to educate the community on what autism is and just kind of the bright lights of it, and just get to know them more. And so from getting involved, there is a podcast that, it was being produced on a weekly basis. I do have to admit that since I have been working full time from home and juggling the nonprofit and being a teacher,
her husband's put the hammer down on her, is what she's saying.
I have not been producing for the last several weeks. But there's also a podcast too, where I have not only service providers and parents, of the spectrum, but one of my goals also was to interview those on the spectrum, because I think it's very important if they do have a voice that we listen. And so I've had several guests on the spectrum, ranging from, actual therapists that are on the spectrum. NASCAR's first driver who is on the spectrum. Anthony Iani, which is the first
NFL?
Division One basketball player with autism. So some amazing individuals that are just so articulate, really, and being able to share their stories of autism. So for any of people that just want to know more about it, or even just share that with someone that they know that may be interested, that would be really super beneficial.
Well, I want to have you back on to talk specifically about autism and the spectrum.
I would love to talk about it.
Well, because there's an enormous number of parents that are dealing with it now.
Yes.
And have you ever met the Hickey family, Linda Hickey and their dog Xena? Have you heard about them?
I have not. No.
So we fell in love with the situation. She's been on my radio shows before, and I need to get her back on the podcast. But there was a really interesting story about a pit bull that was found left for dead on the side of the road. And there's a point to this story, but if you'll follow me, literally the pictures, if you Google Xena, the pit bull, you will see these pictures. They thought she was dead. They thought they were just picking up her body. It's a baby pit bull. And they nursed it back to health. And this family, the Hickey family in Georgia, who had an autistic child, Johnny Hickey, they adopted this dog. And up until then, he was in the, I don't know if I'm saying this right, but he was in the part of the spectrum where he couldn't communicate. He didn't talk. He was not vocal.
Nonverbal.
All of those things. This dog literally changed his life.
Oh,
literally changed his life. So now it's become a popular dog on social media. But and now they've got like 8 dogs. But they're a fascinating family to follow. But the reason I bring it up is that I just wanted to say this one more thing, is that I don't know anything about autism in order to be able to pronounce myself any kind of expert. What I've seen from what I've read, from listening to you talk, to talking to Linda Hickey and her family, sometimes it is the smallest thing that you or I would never, ever imagine would take somebody and turn their life around completely for the positive. What worries me about this situation is that those smallest things can fall through the cracks, because that normal interaction with people who find those smallest things is now being taken away from your child. Does that make sense? And that's what worries me about it, and why I think this is such an important issue, because I'll say this too. There are brilliant people on the spectrum. God forbid we let one of them fall through the cracks and we don't get our, I'm not saying Elon Musk is autistic, but we don't get our next Elon Musk. You know what I'm saying? We don't get our next Edison. We don't get our next. These are people who go on to accomplish amazing things that help out the entire human race. God forbid we lose one of them because something fell through the cracks because we were worried about wearing a damn mask. You know, that's the thing. So, all right, I'm off my podium now. Sorry.
Oh, great point. I will look up Xena, the pit bull.
And it just along the line, you guys will both love this, of what we were talking about with the hysteria over this virus. California has released an edict today that diners at restaurants now have to take their mask off and on in between bites. And they even have a cartoon for the brilliant people of California to be able to follow the cartoon to know when they're supposed to have their mask on and when they're allowed to take a bite of their food. So that's where
great.
We are.
That's great.
8 months after this virus.
We're losing
come about.
Brain cells.
I know, right? Absolutely. Well, I love you guys both. I haven't met you in person yet.
She's Susan, a big hiker, Leland.
But,
you love her.
Well,
I
know that. I know that we're going to get together soon, and we're going to do some of that hiking. So I appreciate you both.
Love it.
Anything
Thank you so
else
much.
Before I let you go? Anything final? Any final thoughts from either of you?
Well, I swore I wasn't going to talk much during this, and I feel like I did. But I will say this. Let me go back to the autism tribe, just about what Susan's done for me. So, Leland, I was like you, and I still very much am like you in the sense of I don't know much about autism. Susan and Alex both are teaching me every day what it is. And I think you kind of ended by saying what worried you. What worries me is having someone who's just not understood. Right. And I think that's what Susan's main goal is with my autism tribe, is she wants to make sure that those that are on the spectrum are understood, because this is what I do with Alex, is that I watch things he does, says, ways he behaves, his stimming, and I sit there, cause I just sit and watch, and I think, why does he do that? And every night before we go to bed, she gets 30 or 40 questions of, why did he do this? Why do you think he did this? Why is he doing this? What is this about? And all this stuff. And I don't know that she always knows the answers. The only one that honestly knows the answers is him. And you know what? And I think that's the scary thing about any, whatever you want to call this, emotional disorder, mental disorder, whatever you want to speak to this, is that the people who struggle with these things, they don't understand. And so other people from outside of that community have to study, have to learn, have to bone up on and understand honestly for them, because Susan's biggest word to me over the last year that we've gotten to know each other is advocate. I wanted to advocate, always be an advocate for Alex and for people like him. And that's what I feel like I'm learning to turn into, because you can't learn in this case, in Alex's case, because that's the personal connection to me of who he is, what his personality is, and learn what that is, and then not feel like, okay, I'm starting to get it, and now I want other people to understand it as well.
Yeah.
And so as far as what I think my autism tribe is about, I think that's what Susan's main goal is. She just wants people to understand it, be educated about what autism is and what autism isn't, I guess.
Yeah, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. MyAutismTribe.com, MyAutismTribe.org. Love you both. Thank you guys for
Love
joining
you
us.
Love you too.
Yeah, thanks for opening up to us about this, and we'll chat soon.
All right, bud.
Thanks.
All right, another big thanks to our sponsor, Louisville Cabinets and Countertops. Again, they did our kitchen, and we were super pleased with the work that they did. In fact, I'm pretty confident that it's the reason our house sold in like one day, because you walked in and it was just beautiful and the kitchen was right there, kind of in your face, and they did such a great job with it. We had a very awkward, ugly island, and they converted that to something that was not only usable space, but also just looked beautiful and fit in the space. which was awesome. Louisville Cabinets and Countertops is at 6200 Hit Lane in Louisville, right on the border of Oldham County and Louisville. So if you're in southern Indiana, Louisville, or Oldham County, stop by Louisville Cabinets and Countertops showroom and talk to their three designers on staff about what your needs are for your home. And if you're a do-it-yourselfer, they got affordable cabinets in stock that you can just pick up and put up yourself, or you can have them do a turnkey kitchen remodel for you. They are basically, I hate to say this phrase because it's such a like such an overused marketing phrase, but it really is true. They're a one-stop shop for your kitchen remodeling needs, right? Like, it sounds dorky, but it's so true because they could do all of it. So it's Louisville Cabinets and Countertops, 6200 Hit Lane, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-930-3304. Give them a call. Talk to them and tell them Leland sent you, okay? Also, thanks to DX Audio, Dynamics Audio in Lexington, Kentucky, for their help with the audio of this program, and JP Web Design. And a big thanks to you, our listeners, who continue to keep us going. Thank you for the growing audience numbers. It's really awesome. You can also check out select episodes on WGTK in Louisville. So check that out. It airs on Saturdays and Sundays, and my commentaries weekly, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Check those out as well. You can follow us on Instagram, at Greatly Londo, at The Disruption Zone. On Twitter, it's at Leland Show and at Zone Disruption. And, of course, download us for free at any place where podcasts are found. Google Play, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio app. It's all there for you, and you can have fresh new episodes delivered to your pocket. I'm Leland Conway. Thanks for listening to The Disruption Zone.